Welcome back to My Radio at stanpelke.com. Hello again. I'm Stan Pelke, your host at My Radio. This is the seventh podcast in my series of readings from my original science fiction novel, Project Earth, Dawn of Defiance. Today's program introduces Chapter 4. If you'd like to listen to more of my original music before the release of the eighth podcast, please visit the My Music page on stanpelke.com. You can also find links to some of my reviews, as well as blog posts on leadership and arts entrepreneurship. Chapter 4, The Nightmare Station. The battle for Saint-Sophie-sur-Douve had lasted for the remainder of the afternoon, and a lone German sniper had to be tracked down and killed in the evening. But the American paratroopers had finally secured the town. Charlie Speer, however, had not taken part in the final skirmishes, nor had he been present in the evening hours as townspeople began to tentatively emerge from hiding to greet their American liberators. Like the physically wounded, Charlie Speer was now resting in a makeshift field hospital, hastily set up in the very train station he had helped to capture, the very train station that had haunted his dreams for so long now. Several other men from his platoon had been placed on cots near Charlie, but he had not seen Sherman. And of course he was very uneasy about being in the train station itself. The medics had not understood his initial panic, and when an army doctor finally arrived in the late afternoon, Charlie had first been restrained, then sedated. He was slowly coming out of the medicine's foggy effects as the sun set late that evening, and he had the presence of mind now to lay quietly on his cot, to look and to listen. This simply could not be the same place, despite outward appearances. In the midst of his terror, in the middle of the assault, he must have just imagined the octagonal towers. Yet, in the waning evening light, the lobby, now filling up with cots and medical supplies and a makeshift desk where a group of doctors and nurses would periodically go to fill out medical records, looked exactly as he remembered from his dreams. Charlie tried not to glance off into the deep shadows to his right, where the most grievously wounded soldiers were being tended, yet his eyes kept sweeping that area, hunting for any sign of the comic books, the kiosk, and the gloved hand. Charlie squeezed his eyes shut. Tears slid down his cheek. "Maybe I am just dreaming now," he whispered to himself. "Maybe I will wake up at home." He slept fitfully the first night. There was a brief counteroffensive about a dozen miles to the west as a German battalion tried to retake the high ground. First the sound of German artillery, then the sound of American bombers overhead woke Charlie several times. Just before dawn, a nurse, younger than Charlie, with red hair and a pleasant smile, woke him to take his temperature and to check his pulse. He sipped some of the water that she offered and took some pills. She had been very kind, and he appreciated the warmth in her voice and in her hands as they took his pulse. But he'd been unable to sleep afterwards. Some breakfast and a lukewarm cup of coffee followed at around 7 a.m. By then, Charlie was wide awake. Boredom soon set in. Sometime in the mid-morning, a runner arrived from the small house down the road that had become company headquarters. He was carrying letters from home for the company's wounded soldiers. Many of the letters were for men who were too hurt or too medicated now to read them. These were left in the care of the head nurse, who placed them, reverently, in one of the drawers of the records desk. "One for you, Corporal!" the runner chirped as he handed Charlie a letter from Gloria Jane. It was a godsend, and Charlie did not even remember to thank the young private who had brought him this great boon. He tore open the envelope and tugged at the lavender paper. It smelled of her. Absolutely heaven, Charlie sighed. It was a dream that he wished really would last forever. June 10th, 1944. My dearest Charlie, I hope this letter finds you well. I am trying to follow the news of the invasion, but the radio reports make me too nervous and I simply cannot read the papers. I miss you and I pray every day that you are safe and sound. Things are better at Mrs. Henderson's. She's improved very much since she took that bad fall last month. I've been managing to get her out of bed most mornings and into the garden, where she putters a bit before lunch, but then she just wants to sit on the porch afterwards. I've encouraged her to start painting again, but she says she has enough pictures of her flowers and apple trees. I may surprise her next week by organizing a bridge club and luncheon with some of her friends. I have a feeling, though, that her slump is more about her son never being in touch than the fall itself. Last week she heard from Mrs. Tomley that her grandson was killed in Italy, and I think that made Mrs. Henderson very lonesome for her son. I'll keep trying to do what I can to help her find some comfort and peace. In the meantime, all the studying I've been doing of those old medical school books also seems to be paying off. I volunteered to receive some training in emergency field care and was accepted. The instructor told me I had a lot of natural talent, but I assured her it was because I had been reading those old books. She actually suggested I go back to school to become a nurse after the war was over. I didn't mention that I wanted to study math. Anyway, my parents finally heard from Rich. His division had had some trouble in Italy fighting for Monte Cassino, and he had not had a chance to write for weeks. But Papa says they finally received a letter, and he is doing just fine. But Johnny is a different story. Charlie, he was shot pretty badly, and he's still in a military evacuation hospital somewhere in North Africa. My aunt is beside herself, but she and Uncle Jim have been able to send him some additional items, and they have had two letters from him. You take care, Charlie. Don't you do anything crazy. I want you back, not a dead hero. Oh, Charlie, I should not have written that. I am so proud to be able to say my husband is in France now, and I want you to do what you can to take care of Sherman and the men in your squad. But I want you home safely when this is all done. I still believe there is so much ahead of us, so many good things. Well, I will close now. You know how I feel. I wish you were beside me, your hand in mine, your lips on mine. My heart is yours, Charlie, and yours is mine. Love always, your Gloria Jane. Charlie reread the last paragraph once, twice, three times. Then he carefully refolded the letter and slipped it into his pocket. There was no way that he was going to be parted from those words. He lay back on his pillow, closed his eyes, and smiled as he thought of her and pictured her beautiful face filling his exhausted mind. About an hour later, one of the attending doctors stopped by to see him. Charlie had dozed off, still picturing Gloria Jane's face, and he had not heard the doctor approach. "Well, Corporal Spear, physically you seem to be unharmed." Charlie stirred, opened his eyes, then tried to sit up. "Easy, son. No need for that. I was just checking in. You seem to be physically unharmed, which is very good, but you're suffering from a severe lack of sleep, not unusual in these circumstances. I think it's safe to say you suffered momentarily from emotional fatigue, brought on by the shock of having just seen three squad members killed in front of you. I'm going to keep you here one more day and night, but if you're doing this well tomorrow, I plan to discharge you so that you can rejoin your company. They're still billeted in town, but I don't know if there are plans to have your company move out anytime soon." "I understand, sir," Charlie replied. "In the meantime, if you're up to it, there are several men from your unit who might benefit from your company this afternoon. You might read to some of them. I think there are a few who received letters from the States. Or you could try the paper, or play cards with the men who can sit up on their own, or help them write letters home." "Sure thing, Doc. I can do that. Happy to." "Good. I'll have one of the nurses bring you some more coffee and a newspaper and some writing paper." Strengthened by the letter from home and a second cup of coffee, Charlie felt pretty good and soon sat up, then stood up, then began to make the rounds among his companions. All of this helped relieve his mind of some of the anxiety caused by the battle and the train station. Charlie played cards for a half hour with one of his squad members. Despite his battle brother's severe shoulder wound, Charlie and the other trooper shared a few laughs and traded stories from their first few days after D-Day, and especially about their experiences taking the town of Carrington with the rest of the airborne infantry units. But neither wanted to reflect on their most recent days, which was fine with Charlie. He did not want anything to dull the joy that Gloria Jane's letter had brought him. Lunch was sparse, but the sunlight was soothing, the air was fresh, and the letter in his pocket was like a sacrament. After lunch, Charlie read the latest edition of the Armed Forces newsletter to three troopers he did not recognize. Two of them were in bad shape. Private Stephen Jackson from Michigan had a large bandage wrapped around the left side of his head. The doctors were worried that the sight in his left eye would be gone for good. Sergeant Phil Morgan from Nebraska had been shot twice in the right arm and once in his left shoulder. He was in a lot of pain and seemed to barely listen. Private Chip Clarkson from Boston had been shot in the left leg, but he was expected to make a full recovery and was in a fairly good mood. He tried to crack jokes as Charlie read the news, but neither of them could lift Phil's mood. By the late afternoon, a wheelchair had been found for Chip, and Charlie pushed him around the makeshift ward as the two men checked on more soldiers. They discovered that in the field hospital, in addition to about 24 American soldiers, there were several British officers, a Canadian mechanic, two French resistance fighters, and even a German prisoner under the watchful eye of three American MPs. The British officers and the two American paratroopers traded war souvenirs and stories, cigarettes, and even some lighthearted insults. They parted company with equally absurd predictions about which of their divisions would reach Berlin first. The sun began to set, and a sparse evening meal was distributed among the wounded and the recovering. Betty, a pretty blonde nurse from Indianapolis, greeted Charlie and Chip, who had managed to get his cot moved over near Charlie and his company mates.
"So, Betty, when I get out of here, I'm taking a trip to Paris for my leave. I think it's about time I see something of this country I'm helping to free. How about you come along? We'll visit the cafes, walk along the Seine, and dance into the wee hours of the morning."
Chip grabbed her hand and gave it an exaggerated kiss, before laughing his charming laugh and winking at her. Betty smiled and handed him his evening pills. "I'm not sure my fiancé will like that. Besides, I've already seen Paris. I want to go somewhere new."
"But you've not seen Paris with me. I'd show you a good time." "No? Well, maybe you could recommend one of your friends. They seem to have found the prettiest country girls to be our nurses. Who would have thought I'd have to come so far to see the best American beauties?"
Charlie's thoughts drifted to Gloria Jane. Her letter had been a welcome surprise and the first real emotional tonic he had experienced in weeks. Even now he could picture her as she was the first time he'd seen her. He had been absolutely smitten by her in those first moments. She was 17, all auburn locks and blue eyes and red cheeks, with a smile that set his heart on fire. She was smart, funny, gracious, and courteous. It was a fine Saturday morning, June 13th, 1936, and Charlie had run up to Johnny Thompson's house to pick up his friend for a friendly game of baseball about to begin at their high school, Franklin Academy in Malone. There she was, sitting on the porch, all the way up from Albany, and visiting her cousin. Hi, Charlie had managed to stammer as he pulled himself out of his silent adoration of this angelic figure. "Hello. I'm Charlie Spear, one of Johnny's friends." She smiled and rose from the porch swing, straightened her pretty summer dress, set the book down that she had been reading, and extended her right hand. "I'm Gloria Jane. Nice to meet you, Charlie. You too." There was an awkward silence broken only by the twitter of two goldfinches that swung by the porch on their way to the back garden. "Are you going to come to the game? To the baseball game?" Charlie asked, and then he added, as if it mattered, "Johnny's pitching." "Is he?" she replied, sitting back down. Charlie watched her movements, wished he could slide down onto the porch swing next to her. Instead, he tried to lean coolly against one of the porch pillars as he folded his arms across his chest. "Yup, he's having a pretty swell season." And then getting up his courage a bit more, "I play first base." She smiled and tilted her head slightly, The sunlight brushed her left cheek, and shadows danced across her hair, her neck, her hands folded in her lap. My brother Rich plays first base on the team at Clarkson. I wonder if he knows you guys are having a game. There was an awkward silence. Charlie's eyes noticed the book beside Gloria Jane. It seemed like a logical and obvious place to continue. What are you reading? It was Gloria Jane's turn to awkwardly pause. She picked the book up, turned it over on her lap, and fumbled with the back cover. A book of letters. Whose letters? Rebecca Maud Allen's. Charlie raised an eyebrow. I don't know that name. She was a Civil War widow. Really? My grandmother gave me the book. Is it good? Yeah, mostly. A lot of the letters are about her move west. Oh, she went to California? Yeah, she helped her husband, General Mortimer Allen, build the Trans-Pacific Railway. Really? Now Charlie, the would-be mathematician and engineer, took some genuine interest. Tired of leaning against the pillar, he casually sat down on the top porch stair, but he positioned himself so he could easily see her. Gloria Jane turned on the swing so she could see him better. I love trains, Charlie said. Been traveling back and forth to Buffalo and Albany to see my family for years. She's something of a hero to me, Gloria Jane said, relaxing a bit. Not only did she live and work with her husband out in the wilderness as they built the line, but she actually did some of the surveying and managed most of the finances. Do you like numbers? Charlie asked. She nodded. It's what I'd like to study if I go to college. I don't know. My father says it's a silly dream to be a girl who wants to study mathematics. The front door swung violently open and smashed the house's wooden siding. Johnny flung himself out, followed closely by a slightly older boy who had to be Gloria Jane's older brother, given how much he looked like her and Johnny. He was chewing gum and was wearing a Letterman sweater, despite the warm spring air. Hey, Charlie, you've met Gloria Jane, and this is my cousin Rich. He plays for the varsity team at Clarkson. I thought he could come along, too.
Hiya, Chuck,
Rich said, extending his hand and smiling a big grin like Johnny's. Introductions made, the three young men prepared to leave. Johnny and Rich bounded off the porch, all laughter and energy. Charlie hesitated, looked at them, then back at Gloria Jane. Did you want to come along? She watched the boys, then looked at Charlie. Okay, she said, rising. He did not even realize he'd done it until Gloria Jane squeezed the hand he'd offered to help her down the stairs. The game had not gone particularly well, but Charlie barely realized, nor would he have cared if he had paid attention to the score. He was too busy trying to figure out what more he could say to the beautiful young lady he had met that day. As the spring term ended a few days later, Johnny announced he was leaving the next morning for a trip to Albany to see his cousins. Charlie's stomach turned with nerves and some jealousy. Do you think Gloria, I mean Rich and Gloria Jane, will be coming back up to town to visit you this summer? Charlie asked. Johnny smiled knowingly. Maybe for the 4th of July. Charlie scrimped and saved the next 3 weeks as he did odd jobs for his grandfather and worked extra hours for Mr. Clayton at the general store. He was committed to having something nice to wear for the 4th of July dance. He was going to ask Gloria Jane to dance, at least once. But every time he tried to figure out how he would ask her, his hands began to shake and his mouth grew dry. It was 3 agonizing weeks. The summer had become exceptionally hot, and the air was thick with humidity, pollen, and the smell of country men and women working that little bit more, trying to best the ongoing want caused by the depression. The heat had made Grandfather irritable, and he had not been pleased when Charlie had spent his hard-earned savings on a new blue sports coat from Mr. Clayton's store.
That's money best spent on college. I don't want you tending other men's stores or fields your whole life, Charlie boy. Your pa had thought of being a doctor, coming back to take care of the old folks in town, or heading to Syracuse or Albany to make good. You've the brains for it, the sums and sciences. Get out while you can, boy. That's what I says.
There's nothing wrong with being a farmer, Grandpa. You're a farmer, a good man. You've been a good pa to me. They had sat quietly at the kitchen table after that, eating cucumbers and tomatoes picked fresh from the garden that evening, with warm bread their neighbor, Widow Jackson, had baked that afternoon.
I, a good man. I've sure tried to be that, but I'm not the farmer my pa was, nor his brothers. Can't get the land to do what I want anymore. And I want more for you, Charlie boy. Well, maybe I'll head to Albany next fall, Grandpa. Find a job in a factory or in a store. Things gotta be better there than up here. Grandpa's mood seemed to lighten, and he chuckled. You thinking I don't know what's on your mind in Albany? He sipped his water, all the while looking at Charlie over the rim of his glasses. You thinking I don't hear you and Johnny Thompson talk now and then out on the back porch? If Johnny's cousin is half as lovely as his grandma used to be back when she and I was your age, well, then I thinks I know what you have in mind, Charlie boy. Charlie looked down at his plate of food but smiled. She is pretty, Grandpa, he said quietly. Takes more than pretty to make a life together. She's smart and kind. Aye, and all that. But she tain't college, boy. This world's changing. I would give my life away to have the chance to go study now like you could. So much more I wanted to know. So much more I wanted to read and think. And say! Grandpa fell silent. Charlie picked at his remaining cucumber slices. Maybe I can have it all, Grandpa. Maybe, Charlie boy. Maybe. 'Tis a tall order. But I sure hope so. I sure hope so. And there they stood on the town square only a few days later, Saturday, July 4th, 1936. The band was well rehearsed and in good form. Couples were dancing together or walking arm in arm around the edges of the square, admiring the homespun crafts, tasting the prize pies and jams, trying the winning breads and pastries. Johnny had already dashed off laughing to find a suitable partner, any one of the many hometown lasses who loved his wit and handsome face. Even Sherman, dressed in one of Grandpa's better suits for the occasion, was managing to have a good evening, as he took to the floor with Susan Clayton, of all people. But Charlie stood frozen, watching Gloria Jane, but hesitant to approach her. She had spent some time talking to Rich, and then to her uncle and aunt. They had moved on, and an older boy, in uniform no less, had walked up to her and introduced himself. She'd been polite, but her face kept tipping ever so slightly toward Charlie, who was waiting near the bandstand. Charlie Spear, go talk to her, he demanded of himself. And then a step, and another, hesitation, another stranger intruding and talking to her. Charlie drew back for a moment. And then it was as if another mind had driven his heart and then his whole body forward, and he found himself suddenly beside her. Hi, Gloria Jane. Hello, Charlie Spear. My, you look handsome tonight. I like that blue jacket. Makes you look ever so dapper. Thanks, Gloria Jane. And then she had not waited any longer. She pulled his arm to her and put hers into the crook of his. You've left me waiting a long time to dance, Charlie. He smiled. I wasn't sure if you'd want to. Well, you'll never know until you ask. And they danced all the rest of the evening. There might have been a first kiss between them that night. But as they walked back toward Johnny's house after the dance, they'd nearly tripped over Sherman's body lying on the edge of the street. He was moaning, then laughing softly, then moaning again. Despite promises to Grandpa, Sherman had drunk too much that night, and from the look of his right eye, he'd picked a fight with someone. Sherm, Charlie had sighed simply, letting go of Gloria Jane's arm and squatting down to check on his friend. Charlesy boy! Sherman had whistled as he momentarily recognized his friend. Charlesy, what you doing here? Come on, Sherm. Let's go back to Grandpa's. I want him to take a look at that eye. Sherman chuckled and then moaned and chuckled again as Charlie hoisted him to his feet. Believe me, Charlesy boy, she was worth it. With the tall, lanky boy's arms slung around his neck and shoulders, Charlie looked back at Gloria Jane, pain in his heart and eyes and voice. I'm so sorry, he whispered. I'm sort of responsible for him. And then his angel's face had lit up and a smile flashed across her face. It's fine, Charlie Spear. He needs you. And I've already had the pleasure of your company for most of the evening. I had a swell time, he told her. I did too. She didn't wait for an invitation, but leaned up and gave him a quick kiss on the cheek. I hope I see you again soon, Charlie, she whispered, before turning quickly and heading back down Riverside Road. Charlie was too starstruck to say anything more.
This was an original work of music and text by Stan Pelkey. Please note that any unauthorized broadcasting, public performance, copying, or re-recording of this program, its story, or its music is an infringement of copyright.